Hi, Mark.
Yo, brother.
I'm going full beanie today. I didn't have my tinfoil hat, so I'm going.
Does it keep your brains in?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I can see now why Tim. It actually increased my intelligence quotient by a pure percentile. I get Tim Pool now. I understand Tim.
Automatically makes you the smartest person in the room. Now we know why.
I mean, yeah. Look at the competition, just wasting them constantly. So you sent me something. Let's wet our whistle with this before we get to the. This is a little amuse-bouche.
My French is so good, you have to translate that for me.
Yeah, a little amusement for your mouth, to wet the palate.
Tongue taster.
This is a dude interviewing. I don't know.
Whatever. I think it's a girl.
Ah, whatever, fine. Presents as female. We'll go with that one.
Ish.
And they're talking about
no matter what, we just offended someone.
Sure.
There's so much trans hate in the fucking world. Sorry. There's so much trans hate in the world right now, and I'm so done with it. And pride just means that we are unabashedly happy just to be alive.
Yeah. Anna, where do you personally feel that hate is coming from?
I love when you get someone who's just said this stuff in their head and with their little friend group has never been challenged or ever thought about this thing further than just that statement, because they usually say that and goes, yeah, just happy to be alive. You're right. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes perfect sense.
Most places, but especially the government.
And in your own life, where would you say that you feel the hate the most?
I feel like I kind of internalize a lot of the hate, so it feels like it mostly comes from myself at this point.
Okay.
So cruel.
So cruel. So... Again, if your position can be defeated by simply asking why.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, what shit. Do you mean by that? What do you, where, point to the dolly where the bad governments touch you. It's you know, we've said this, many of us have said this, but if you think you're being oppressed, but then walk outside and see every single billboard and every single company and every single government institution and every single everything promoting your position. That's not a oppression.
You can see it. You can see it right when you've been the govern. Fuck. And
government?
Jesus, you know, they're totally on our side. I got all the
Yeah, imagine saying, see, go ahead. Imagine saying that in Canada.
Like, right. It's like the one draping rainbow flags over the Canadian, gayest prime minister in the history of Gayville.
Are we taking bets now that Justin Trudeau is divorcing his wife, Sophie? Are we taking bets that he's just going to come out as bi or gay or trans?
100%, 100%. Yeah. And then that's going to be the perfect victimhood shroud, right? Of course, if you don't like the cost of everything being triple, and everything's obviously objectively better since 2015. And if you don't like that, it's because you hate the gays.
You hate the gays.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Did you see Mr. DeGrasse Tyson, the genius of all geniuses, this week?
I saw
wisdom on trans, like that. It's just it's perfectly scientific, Jason. You see, if you wake up one day and feel 80% female, you dress like that. And if you feel 80% male, you dress like that. And this is makes perfect sense because pursuit of happiness.
Let me find it here.
Oh yeah, do you have access to?
Anyway, we got it.
Oh, and he can't go 30 seconds without the classic conflation. It's like, wait, sex or gender? Nobody cares if girls wear pants. Stop.
But see, we should though, because here's the thing.
That's it. We're starting. I'm going to start. I'm like, no, you're a girl. Burka.
Well,
kneecap.
Who just said it? I was just watching a clip of Viva Fry and not Owen Benjamin, Sargon of Akkad, and they, Yeah, they were having they had an interview apparently or talk whatever.
Damn but you, David. Can't one of them a shill.
Yeah, you know, maybe he didn't like your dinner.
He's good at what he does. I take it back. Love you.
Little, you know, so shout out to one of our Montreal boys who's doing good. He's Jewish. He's got connections, but so
6 months till he's banging. What's her face? What's his face?
Justin Trudeau.
No. Oh God, damn it!
That would be
Michael Mouse's boyfriend.
That would be a weird turn of events, wouldn't it? Like if all of a sudden Viva Fry hooks up with Justin Trudeau and just like, or
that would be, yeah. No, I was thinking at least a tranny.
Yeah. Well. Oh, you mean like Blair White?
Kind of. Yeah, that's the one. That's the chick.
Where are they going with this? Oh, so anyway, so Sargon was saying that he says his black pill moment was realizing that in order to fix what's going on, the radical extremes you'd have to take to in order to start to correct the system, just would be unpalatable to anyone in the West. Like, for example, you know, getting rid of female teachers or certainly restricting women teachers for men. And I actually am on board with that because I think boys should not be taught by women.
Oh, I'd take it even further. I think we need to go back to apprenticeships.
Right.
Like, no, just straight up, like do maybe like K through two, learn how to spell, speak, and then chop wood.
And the reasoning why is because our current system leads to this.
The XXXY chromosomes are insufficient. Because when we wake up in the morning, we exaggerate whatever feature we want to portray the gender of our choice.
I don't think it works that way.
Either the one you're assigned, the one you choose to be, whatever it is. Today, I feel 80.
We're assigned a gender now?
You're assigned a gender at birth.
So he went 15 seconds without fucking up the argument. Like, at least get your bullshit right if you're going to be a bullshit artist. And this is what I can't stand. They're like, oh, we're the unscientific ones. I'm like, pick a side. Pick a thing. I've been sent the WHO's definition of gender. It's not sex. So who's assigned a gender at birth? Like, learn your bullshit at least, because I can't. But then this is over and over. This, you can't even argue because they don't even stick to their bullshit. Sorry. Is that you or me? Wrecking the show.
That's me.
Good way to go, Jay. God damn it. Take the call. Yeah. Just do it.
Hang on. Yeah, let's continue this.
20% female, 20% male. I'm gonna put on makeup. I'm a woman. Tomorrow I might feel 80% male. I'll remove the makeup and I'll wear a muscle shirt.
Manhood.
Why do you care?
Doesn't make sense.
What business is it of yours to require that I fulfill your inability to think of gender on a spectrum?
I'm interested in reality.
Because you just conflated it with sex, you scientist.
Sorry, I'm being asked for something here.
And I'm sorry, we weren't the ones who started caring. I care about the right to say things as I see them and reality existing.
Pitch our Patreon and stuff for that for a second. I'll be right back.
Sorry, what did you say? All right, I'm just going to take over. We just sent something. I don't know how to fix that. Jay, you left me hanging and I got nothing prepared. Gender. Fuck, what a bitch. So I will harp on my number one topic until everybody gets bored. Gender and sex are different things. You can dress however you want. It's not complicated. Cheers, everyone. Happy Friday.
Just
you know,
there.
You know you can't leave me hanging like that.
I got a daughter. I got to do daughter stuff occasionally. Good dad.
I am a sounding board only. You cannot do that to me. It's literally just goes boop, 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 boop.
We got a Patreon up. Links in the description below. Go send us money if you like. Exclusive content produced there at least once a month. And of course, join us on Facebook. YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, Soundcatchers, blah, 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 blah. Give us a rating there if you can. If you liked, give us a thumbs up. Join, subscribe, share, do all the things.
Yeah, subscribe. Do that thing. That's like that. The most important one. I like that. I always hear people saying that you should do that, and I'm going to join the crowd. Mansell Wax.
It makes us feel special. Exactly. If you can't send us money, at least give us some algo love.
I like attention more than money. Give me the attention. That's all I care about.
I loyalty.
I want prefer the money.
It's okay.
Send Jason the money. Give me the attention.
I've got a mortgage.
Perfect.
It's
perfect. Match getting right. He's got a mortgage. I'm a renter for life because I live in Canada.
Okay.
I'm committed to destitution.
Talk about Canada.
Sorry. No, I just wanted to, because he should co-host this show. Do they have a right to force us to believe something that is not true? That's the point. It's like, that's what we care about. What's actually true. I don't give a fuck how you dress. Sorry.
They do because they put expert somewhere in their name. And that's all it takes. Yeah. Trust the science. Trust the experts. Mm. Don't question the narrative.
Well, apparently, Richard Dawkins is not an expert on biology.
That was a fun one. Did you see that? And people are saying, well, who's this guy? He's like, he's a biologist.
Yeah, like the most famous biologist in history. Kind of should be the person, but only trust the experts when they're government funded totalitarians. Okay, makes perfect sense. Yeah, don't.
The commentary on that one was just I found the most bizarre.
Yeah, his argument was stupid because he's attacking it from the wrong angle again, like always. That's why I kind of harp on this. I'm like, okay, we got our side, the pro reality side, has to get the argument right. Which is don't get into the biology thing, because that's bullshit. They don't even know which side of the hill they're standing on. You've got to go to the source, which is nobody cares how you dress. Stop complaining.
Yeah, but I mean, so again, the manifestations of this are what we shouldn't be attacking, because it's just the manifestation. Right. That's the stuff they can't help. I don't think you know, when we start getting into the meat and potatoes of this episode about talking about the spirit of the age and sort of what's happening around us, you know, I can talk about memetics, I can talk about all these other fanciful things, but essentially what it is because it is spiritual, it's beyond us. It's not not a controllable urge. I think there are people who are finding ways to use it, to utilize it, if they're kind of seeing it, if they're privy to the information before it gets released to the public, or as it starts to manifest, I think there's people in positions where they can manipulate it, but they can't control this thing either. It's beyond the spectrum of human control.
Yes, but my
it's a bitter white pill.
Yeah, my pushback on that is like, no, what they need is dads to kick their ass. There's no dads kicking their ass. Hopefully. Lord willing, right? Like I have a personal experience, you know, my parents split up at a certain age, and from going through it, yeah, the beatings were better than none.
Yeah. Well, so I think what we're going to get now is what I'm calling the vengeful son, which is the sort of inverse of the divine son. You know, we're in sort of an inverted world, and we have been for hundreds of years now, but you know, certainly since the Enlightenment, that started the inversion. And now we're going through periods of sort of the tyrannical father, the devouring mother, leading to what I'm calling the vengeful son. There's other terms for it in Jungian psychology, but essentially it's the inverse. And that inverse is now taking shape. And we'll point to
is there a cyclical pattern to that though? Like, is it predictable, like the fourth turning that we're clearly in?
I don't think it's as predictable as that. It's predictable in terms of one begets the other. So we can go through these patterns of archetypes that these spirits of the age, or you can call them egregores. An egregore is essentially, it's a sort of a I wouldn't say pseudo spiritual. It's somewhere in between. You can understand it psychologically. You can understand it spiritually. And an egregore is simply like a spirit, a collective spirit that happens when a whole bunch of people begin to believe in something. So a sports team, for example, can be an egregore. It's sort of this spirit that presides over a group of people. It's a manifestation. So, you know, archetypes, like let's say cultural archetypes, are certainly fall into that kind of sphere of something that's collective, that is manifest by the collective, by a collective group of people, by a culture, whatever.
It's a micro zeitgeist.
Right. And as normally these things are kind of confined, but now that we've reached this sort of global saturation because of social media, at least in the West, and that's going to increase now that we have new translation tools, this spirit is now becoming globalized. And that's, I'll say, a bitter white pill, because it'll be transformative, but we got to be very careful about how this,
up to us though, or is it truly spirit form that's, we're just here for the ride?
It. It's not up to us. We've manifested it. And now that we've manifested this thing, it's going to start doing its thing. And the only thing I would say for people to do, and this is bearing the lead, but that's sort of tilde on the whole conversation, but it's like, this is why things like orthodoxy or a very clear spiritual practice is very necessary, because what is going to start coming down the pipe is, I think initially people will cheer it and think that it's a wonderful thing, because it'll look like a lot of things that us right wingers or whatever kind of want, but in reality it's going to be a false god. And I don't like to get into the whole Antichrist conversation too much, that's above my pay grade, but certainly I think this is a step, more of a step towards that than away from it, you know. But we'll get to all that stuff.
Yeah.
So Buck Johnson's in the chat. Buck says,
so many questions.
That whole shtick from Neil deGrasse Tyson was a total straw man from him. He's pretending that the right wingers are protesting men wearing makeup. This has nothing to do with the trans stuff. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Well, exactly. So he goes on here to after that to say, yeah, he was Me Too'd and now he's just a puppet for the regime. Absolutely. But to the comment before, yeah, exactly. Because he says, why do you care? No one cares. Literally no one gives a shit how you dress or what you wear. And it's such a... It's reminiscent of what you're going to play with Rachel Gilmore here. It's like you're talking about everything except the topic.
Right.
So if that's what you need to tell yourself to convince yourself that there isn't a debate here, great. But no one on the other side buys it for a second, because literally no one gives a shit. Women have been cutting their hair and dressing like men and being janitors forever. No one gave a crap. Men have been rock stars for all time. No one gave a shit. It's when you told us reality isn't real and we got to use your made up language that we're like, nah, that's a problem. So yeah, it's a perfect segue into this, where Rachel does a remarkable expose into the trucker protest in Canada and what inspired it, without mentioning the mandates. So let's go.
Why did the Freedom Convoy happen? Some people say it was because of Russia. People who attended it say it was about freedom. But now, one national security expert, the incredibly badass Stephanie Carvin, has taken a crack at giving us some real answers. Her takeaway? The convoy was Canadian. It was the product of a polarized movement that has been growing in Canada for the last decade. One that has convinced a chunk of Canadians to believe that change is only possible through revolution.
That's just Canadians believe that change is only possible through revolution. Gee, I wonder where they would have gotten that idea from. Like, who else would have been popularizing that whole concept? Now we're forced to believe that revolution is a right, is
right wing. Right, those goddamn right wing revolutionaries through history, because I've never read a book or, you know, learn a thing. And I love how, yeah, see, the problem is protesting is now anti-democratic,
right?
Yes. So see, that protesting is a threat to democracy, not an integral part of a healthy one. Something your grievances.
What would be the left wing term for protesting now? Would it be like challenging? We're not protesting. We're challenging structures.
Well, the best example would be BLM. So burning shit. The voice of the, like, stealing Nikes. That's how you get political change.
Why is Midas and Goodyear funding these BLM protests? I don't understand why tire companies are suddenly very interested.
And the local brick kiln. What?
It's like kill the boar, but not really. But really. But they deserve it, but not really.
We just mean in spirit. We mean to argue them vociferously. Yes,
but here's the thing. But they do mean in spirit, because what is the boar spirit? What is the white boar spirit? They want to kill the old gods and replace them with new ones.
I was listening to the song by the guy, I don't know his name, but the Freedom Party in Africa. And it was something like kill the boar, take the farms. And I was like, really, they should change it to like burn the food.
Right. I mean, it's the same thing.
This is where it gets interesting and might be one of the most important videos I've ever made. There were a bunch of conditions that set the stage for that democracy-threatening mindset. Here's what Carvin found. Unsurprisingly, the internet is a huge part of the problem.
Oh, my God.
People spend their time online around those who think the same as them, feeding on and seeking out content that confirms their views. On top of that, fake news stories get shared faster and farther than traditional news. Like-minded communities value winning over backing up their actual claims. And dominating conversations with a certain narrative is more important to them than proving its accuracy.
Can we pause and go slow? Because you gotta hit each point with this, because she is remarkable. I'm sorry. I'm such a, you can't be this dumb accidentally. So I think she's actually a genius. And her remarkable insight there was that the internet makes big stories go faster than traditional news. So hence.
Fake news stories get shared faster and farther than traditional news. Like-minded communities value winning over backing up their actual claims. Dominating conversations with a certain narrative is more important to them than proving its accuracy.
When you slow her down, it's even more verbal diarrhea. It just feels like... I was watching... this is a bit of a tangent, but I was watching, someone sent me a link to a Peter Zahan, I think that's his name. He was on Rogan. He's one of these guys that the MSM kind of pulls up out of nowhere occasionally to confirm all their narratives. Like, you know, China's economy is about to collapse any day now, which it never does. But he's one of those guys, and he was talking about the whole Ukraine Russia situation, and just like systematic. He was talking about the situation in France now with Niger, Niger. We'll just say Niger
because that's Niger.
He's the one who's saying Niger, and it's like, but just the way he says it, it's just
silent J.
It's like a feeling of warm shit, kind of just.
Isn't that all, you know, French?
Just sickly warm shit, kind of evacuating the body, like oh, so slime.
One group is especially good at exploiting this environment of polarized, like-minded social media communities, the far right. The far right repackaged itself, trading hate tattoos for polos and hair gel.
Gavin McGinnis started the... Because he... not the mandates. No, the Proud Boys started the trucker protest because... of the internet. Like, let's try and I want to actually map this out. I want to do the Always Sunny string board and see if I can. I'm gonna do this. Is gonna be my project tonight, regardless of my level of sobriety. I am going to string board out
it only this gets actual better theory.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I know. That's why I drink. So the internet made the right wing. Okay, don't read that. The internet made the right wing hate democracy and decide to protest. That's where we're at so far. Let's continue.
Well, also, they were the ones, of course, spreading that horrible disinformation that certain vaccines
vaccines are amazing.
Vaccines are amazing and godsend. Like,
we would not be alive today if it were not for Marie Curie.
If you're not getting one right now, you're freaking gay. But, okay, YouTube, we just said that. But some people have alleged, like, you know, CDC and health authorities have alleged that there might be some some hiccups,
less perfect
98%
like our union,
98% good effects that might happen occasionally, very rarely, like we
like
should
in the
talk
in the 40s.
I'm only bringing this up in conjunction to the right wing. That's
right. You're saying what they would say. That's not actually a thing. It's
no.
The misinformation spread by the right wing on the internet is that some vaccines at some point weren't less perfect.
Once upon a time, there was this 100% effective, safe and effective procedure that sometimes wasn't 100%. I love Guinness in the morning. Let's get through this.
Also changed its focus from race to identity.
Did you see the right wing changed its focus from race to identity?
Of course.
Clear now?
Civilizational. At the same time, a far-right media ecosystem emerged, publishing unfounded and sensationalist stories on issues like immigration. Harvin names Rebel News and True North as examples. Far-right influencers also emerged. By 2015, Canada had an infrastructure in place that amplifies far-right and extremist narratives. And then some key developments.
Yeah, like, you know, free speech and freedom of the press.
Yeah, well,
that we had crazy infrastructure, that Canada. Nazi infrastructure.
We had things in place.
Why?
It's a riveting three-part series. I think we should deep dive it.
We can do it next week. Next week is Friend or Fed, but that was the end of part one.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it goes on and gets less and less sensible.
How does all that diarrhea link up to what I want to talk about this? So I've been chewing on this idea. And I'll beg the mercy of the crowd to follow me on this. This is not fully formed. This is just more food for thought and kind of gives you an idea of the tangled mess of Jason's brain, especially since I've been critically ill for like 2 months now.
Okay, it's good. I haven't heard this yet, so I'm going to be here in place of the audience, but feel free to speak in the chat and I'll do my best to translate. Jason?
Yeah, and please comment down below. Tell us what you think, guys.
Blow my mind.
Ladies and people and folks. So what started this a few months ago was Tony Blair came out and said something very interesting. Tony Blair came out and said effectively that Labour in the UK, the Labour Party, their best bet at winning elections will be to drop woke, right? All things woke. And he named it. He wasn't like shy about it. Mm-hmm. And that's something that sort of like a academic agent has been kind of mentioning Blair a lot. Like he's a bit of a mastermind behind the scenes, at least in British politics, of how he can, you know, you look to what he's saying and that's kind of where the narrative is going. He's either a mastermind or he's a figurehead or whatever he is, but Blair is someone to pay attention to.
Yeah, he's a, what do you call that, like a weather vane,
carrying a coal mine essentially. Yeah. Right, so you have that being said, and then you have the Bud Light stuff, which I still think that Bud Light will probably end up doing when we see their end of year financials. They'll have signed a whole bunch of contracts. They're gonna do fine. I know their initial sales are, you know, garbage now, but I don't think that's a long term play for them. But regardless, you had this massive backlash with Dylan Mulvaney and all that stuff, and things seem to be turning slightly, very very slightly. In the media sphere, where now you have certain narratives being brought up that aren't being brought up to be attacked, they're being brought up almost as a counterbalance. And the big thing that really got the big sort of piece of this puzzle kind of hit me this past week was the mainstreaming of the manosphere or the red pill movement. Mm. Like initially I thought, because Tate was kind of brought up and Tate was almost brought up as an effigy to attack. Mm. But now there's so many copies of him that are happening so spontaneously and so like memetically across the board, they can't contain it. So you have like Andrew Tate, that pearly things, mm-hmm. Was it called Fit and Fitness or whatever like that, Sneeko. Yeah, like they're cropping up at such a rate that I think one is indicative to this whole egregore idea that I laid out, but secondly, even for the media and for the narrative, they're having to incorporate it now because they seem to be either they can't attack it and destroy it or they don't want to. Hmm. I think the results are the same. So we're now starting to see a movement away from wokeism. What I think where we all collectively might have gotten it, I'll say wrong. It's not wrong. We're just dealing with the information we had presented to us. I think a lot of people thought that wokeism is this totalizing thing, that this is a new religion being born and it's going to take over the world. And there was really good reason for thinking that. However, or you know that this is the new face of Gnosticism, modern neo-Gnosticism in the West. The thing with Gnosticism is that it's never going to be one body. As we've removed Christ from the elite structure, what we're ending up doing is bringing in sort of the old gods and this old spirituality. The thing that was holding it back for so long was some sort of dogmatic belief in Christianity and the Christian structure in society. You remove that, all of a sudden all these other gods kind of creep in. Right. So the idea of, you know, even the Lord of Spirits podcast is based on this, is that God, and especially in the Old Testament, he is the one among many. He is the one true creator God. He's the Lord of all the spirits. And also, so it's kind of the refutal to the old atheist idea. Like, you know, Ricky Gervais once said that, you know, Christians don't believe in 99.9% of all gods. They just believe in one. Atheist just go one step further. Mm-hmm. It's that actually in Orthodoxy, we would,
you know,
say
there are many.
Yeah, we believe in all of them. Like Thor was real. Odin's right. Real. All those guys are at 100% real. They're just not a true god. But
interesting.
And the one thing that's holding them back from dominion or influence in the world is belief in the one true God, which is manifest in Jesus Christ. So I'm trying to walk this back a little bit. And again, this is more food for thought for folks to kind of figure out. Then you can bring into like sort of a Jungian archetype situation for the secularists out there. If the spiritual mumbo jumbo of the gods kind of thing is a bit too much for people to deal with, let's go to Jung, right? And Jung details, let's say, the positive aspects of the great father, the great mother, and the divine son. Sup, Trey? Those are sort of the more positive aspects. So the great father is sort of the dominion of the known. The great mother is the dominion of the yes, Trey. It is the Jason Meany Beanie arc. I have crossed the line. I am now into the Tim Pool level analysis club. I want to be the smartest person in the room.
Difference being, Jason wears it because he has too much hair.
I have way too much hair.
Just trying to tame the beast up there.
It's getting pretty intense.
Basically Italian.
Where was I here? So yeah, so the archetypes, right? So you have the great mother, great father, divine son, right? That's almost the positive archetype structure of these conceptual beings. And in an archetype, it's like you can conceive it as both as an egregore and as a role that we play out, something that is meta and personal at the same time. The inverse of these things is the tyrannical father, the devouring mother, and what I'm calling now the vengeful son. There's also the hateful brother terminology being used, or the vengeful adversary, I think is what Jung terms it.
The Cain,
right? So the way I'm seeing things develop is if we think of the late 19th century and early 20th century up until the end of the two world wars as the domain of the tyrannical father, which gives way to the spirit of the devouring mother from the 1950s onwards.
Can you just like dig into those for a bit? Like, give, like, what's an example?
Yeah. Okay. Let me just place it out. To the devouring mother that brings us up to more or less where we're at today, which is now setting the stage for the vengeful son. And I think you start seeing that in symbols of the manosphere and the red pill. I think you start seeing those in the manifestations of the symbol X. Now Twitter's become X. I'd like to get your ideas on that. And even Mars itself. Mars, so the planet, symbolizes masculinity. It's often the symbology of this, of the sword and shield, of, you know, God of war kind of thing. But it's also enigmatic, because in modern times, you always talk about the mystery red planet. So I think what's being manifest now, and the spirit of the age that is rising up to probably defeat wokeism and destroy it, to kill his, the classic sort of mythological structure of this is that the son who has tried to be destroyed but escapes destruction rises up and kills his parents, and usually the father, and then ascends to that position. So even if you look at the idea of Saturn, which I would say is the symbol of the old, of that old tyrannical father regime, Saturn eats his children. There's a, let me find this. I have it here.
Saturn, I know nothing about any mythology or astrology. So I was thinking while you look that up, like, so the father would be sort of, at least generationally, that period, including the first and second war, that was authoritarian and violent and very masculine, oppressive in a sense, than the mother being the rebellion, the 60s love, or at least everything it was said to be, right? This sort of freedom and flourishing and too much leniency. And now we're moving into the result of that. It's funny, because I'm just thinking about even my own example I gave earlier in the show of children raised sans père, where you're going to get the rebellious kid who grew up without rules or structure, and they're going to want to burn it all down, and maybe that's wokeism, and now you're having a response to that. At least that's sort of where I'm at following you.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's basically it. Like, if you want to lay it out even in more secular structuralist terms, right? Like, you have weak fathers, you had tyrannical fathers, fathers who wished to control all of society in one way or another, right? It does us no good to ignore the fact that, you know, my grandparents' generation and even our father's generation, there was lots of spousal abuse. There was lots of abuse happening.
The leftist 1950s strawman nightmare kind of deal, which was not a fiction.
It's not a fiction.
I got the shit kicked out of me as a kid, and that was par for the course.
Right.
And I grew up in the 80s, 90s.
And women used to get the shit kicked out of them all the time as well. Yeah. Like, that's not a misnomer, but I do believe that it was the outcropping of damaging the psyche of multiple generations of men up to that point, that you militarize men, you send them off to successive wars, you damage them psychologically, you then impose this idea that they have to be the ultimate dominant force in the household, and they have free reign.
Right.
And
that's it.
And
so that
not given, which is, you know, a patriarchal structure, which is, you know, from an Orthodox perspective, which is good. However, there has to be limitations placed on the individual in that situation. Mm-hmm. You're given great power. You're given all this. You're basically given the reins to lead your family. The last thing you should be doing is being the living tar out of them all the time.
Yeah. Like, that's
the tyrannical father.
Not an archetype, but the sort of the classic 1950s dad. Yeah, like, there was a duality in that period, right? Like, things were idyllic in a way because of economically and family structure, and there was community cohesion, and there was still some racial tension to things, but there was also the fact that these were 40 and 50 year olds who all went through military and went across overseas, got the shit kicked out of them, murdered people, came back with that mentality. And what do you think they're going to be like with their kids and their wife when they weren't necessarily raised by their parents?
Well, no, because you had this great distancing, right? So the effects of the Industrial Revolution was so, I think, massive in global societies that we haven't ever spiritually or psychologically dealt with it. We get enough time about the 1930s with the Depression, which is another thing.
We haven't even caught up with the 1700s yet.
No, exactly. But
oh my God, steam power, fuck.
But that Dickens era kind of level of stuff, where you suddenly have for thousands of years, you had parents, fathers living with their children, raising them directly in a family unit where the children and the parents spend pretty much all their time together. They then learn a trade, whatever have you, right? In very rare instances, do the kids get farmed out to specialists in other trades, but usually it's within the community. And that is the standard bearer for the majority of human populations for thousands and thousands of years, mm-hmm. with very few exceptions.
Yeah. And just to jump in with one thought there, yeah. Sorry. A great example of this, I'm still a huge fan of the author Hermann Hesse. Read all of his books, and even though they're more esoteric, I kind of like that because he straddles a lot of things, and I think there's truths in there. And my favorite book of his is called Narcisse and Goldman, and it follows the story of the two exceptions to what was the norm in sort of feudal times, and one was the adventurer and the other was the monk. Other than those two options, go off, grab a horse, see if you can fucking survive going from guild to guild, or you join a monastery. Other than that, you did the job your dad did, and that was it. Or you were a knight, or you were in the establishment. But right, yeah, it was so structured. There was no the idea of even going to a different town.
Because it was your ass. It was your. It was like it's throughout the Bible, like the entire story of Abraham.
Right, it's God terrifying. God is like, go to a different city. He's like, you want me to die?
Yeah, exactly.
What are you talking about?
You want me to go where there's famine? No,
I know these 80 Egypt,
or I have to lie about my relationship to my wife, or else I'm going to get murdered. Like, what? Like, this is a heavy deal. And you're looking at that going, he's just asking you to go down the street, dude. Like, literally on the map. But in biblical times, it's like, you're asking me to leave everything into the unknown, right? Yeah. Which
a half-hour drive.
Right, which is categorized by, that's the male spirit going into the female, into almost a feminine how you say it,
mindset.
The great mother is symbolizes the unknown, right? It's almost that chaotic void, and chaos doesn't have to necessarily even be negative. It just is, like, it's it's literally not knowing what tomorrow is going to bring,
right? But it's the adventurer. It's not necessarily, it's not a bad thing,
right?
But it's fraught.
So you need those stories in a positive sense. You have those stories, and people can kind of take from that and buy them in their life, but while staying stable and structured. I think we can go back as far as the Industrial Revolution to start seeing the denaturing effect of fathers working in factories and mothers working, even mothers working jobs and their children. You see all those pictures from that era that liberals like to bring up, how horrible this thing is, and even where Planned Parenthood and all that stuff comes from. Is all these kids just wandering the street, not having anything to do for the first time in thousands of years, because you kids usually always had something to do.
Yeah, like, chores.
Yeah. And a lot of them worked in factories too, but for the most part, it was just deemed too dangerous, or if they're too young, they can't do that. So you just started to have this denaturing effect of the family, which is split from the natural order, which is, I think, is where you start to get these inversions, right? And now we're in this pattern of eternal inversion, where even the most positive natures of these things will come out negative. So this is sort of part of the warning signs, is that you have symbols like Mars, you have symbols like X, you have symbols like the red pill, Andrew Tate, Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, these new masculine figures which say all the right
pseudo masculine
RFK, right?
Well, I saw someone put out a tweet last week. They said name the people in the manosphere, whatever, who you actually think are proper masculine role models. And I went blank. The only answer I could come up with is they're not famous.
Right.
If you're going to be a proper masculine role model, you're not on the fucking internet. You're in the garage with your kid. I think of my older brother.
I'll vote for Buck Johnson. If Buck Johnson could get into the manosphere somehow, we'll just vote for Buck Johnson. Do it, Buck. Get red pilled, my friend.
Yeah, no. The one I thought of was my older brother, who's I haven't seen in almost 10 years. He's coming here next month with my nephew, who I've never met because I'm a shithead. And this is he see pictures every weekend that he's doing stuff with his kid. That's a masculine role model.
Yeah.
I forget his name again. Malice's boyfriend.
Oh,
I can't remember the name. I've blocked it from my psyche.
She's getting passed around. She's like, I think
she goes from Jones to Malice to
she's got the rub.
Yeah, it's good work if you can find it.
So yeah, so let me lay it out. So tyrannical father leads to the devouring mother, leads to which I think is the wokeism is
yes, sort of
the,
Blair. Thank you, Buck.
Sorry. Wokeism is the finalization of that, right? Where it's the final manifestation of the devouring mother. It's everything the devouring mother would want, you know, castrating their children, creating an infantile state. Keeping all her children close to her under this guile of safety and mothering love, which is actually just crushing and destroying people.
COVID,
everything, right? Lockdowns, all the things. 100% effective and safe and effective, you know. But anyways, so you're seeing those manifestations, and now I think, in rebuttal, you're now seeing this new rise of this new thing, which I'm calling, your brother's on the chat. Oh, thanks, Mark.
AJ.
Can you confirm that he's a shithead for not seeing you? So now you're seeing this manifestation of what I'm calling the vengeful son. And I believe that the vengeful son is going to immediately start to be a very appealing to a lot of right-wing young men. Initially, because it's going to start sounding like it's the cure. Mm-hmm. And it's going to manifest itself in lots of different effigies. Andrew Tate being one, of course, and he's modeling a whole bunch of memetics there. But even RFK, I think, is a symbol of that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's a weird bridge because he's showing pictures of him, you know, working out, being muscular, all that stuff. It's these things are the appealingness of it. And what's appealing, I think why these things work and why it's appealing at all is that something is being born. This desire, this communal desire for this form of spirit, which will take the form of sort of vengeance, of justice. It'll feel like justice finally. But what it really is the inversion of Divine Son, which is the inversion of Christ, which is leading us to Antichrist.
And I was to say, Andrew Tate is the Antichrist.
Well, you know, there's going to be
not wrong. It's yeah. Okay, I get your point now. Yeah, it's an inversion, and maybe that's why. Because I always wonder when you see these guys pop up out of nowhere, right? And it's not because they're so bad that they're trying to shut them down. It's like, no, same with who was it we were talking about last week? Like, if they didn't want us to hear about them, we wouldn't have heard of them. Same with the Tate, same with everything. It is very analytical to the analogous to the Antichrist motif that, yeah, they're being propped up as false idols, false versions of what it is you're supposed to be striving for.
Let's just say this clearly to anyone, or people can quote me on this. Nothing in media happens by mistake or by accident. It doesn't. That doesn't happen.
Or even who's the guy? Red Pill, Coach Red Pill, that he disappeared in Ukraine.
Oh, I don't know. There's so many people who have disappeared. So many Westerners
have
disappeared. We haven't even talked about Gonzo Lira yet, but
that guy.
Was that Gonzo Lira?
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's now captured by a tranny?
Right. Apparently.
So we'll play this last. We'll lead out with that. So this is a picture. This is a classic piece of art. This is Saturn eating his sons to avoid a prophecy. And again, this is sort of the old order. You know, what was World War One and World War Two, other than the system eating its sons, sending its sons off to die, especially in World War One. If you look at all the sort of the propaganda around that war, you know, I remember reading Flanders Fields on Remembrance Day on the school
the Canadian system. Thing for our foreign audience.
But then when you actually look into the whole history of Flanders Fields, it was a propaganda tool. It's asking you to send more of your sons to die, telling you your sons are going to go die in this war, but it's a good thing. Yeah. So send your sons.
It was brutal in Canada. People don't realize that the extent that the propaganda, you think things are bad now, you have no idea. In World War One, they were farmers' kids riding their horses 10 hours into Toronto, killing themselves because they were 16 and you weren't allowed in until you're 17. That's how strong the peer pressure, the spirit of the age was at that time. Go get on a boat, go to the other side of the world and die for who knows what. Because if you don't, it's the four feathers, right? It's the you're a coward, you're nothing. And it was a slaughter machine of masculinity. I don't think we've even begun to come to terms with what has happened.
Which is why I think wokeism, in a weird way, is more of a symbol of that devouring mother at the end of her reign rather than the beginning. Because if you look at the power that, I'm just trying to find that link if I have it. If you look at the power that sort of that old age, I'll just call it Saturn. If you look at that power that of the tyrannical father had in, you know, late 19th century, early 20th century affairs up to mid 20th century. All the revolutions, World War One, World War Two, all being the apex of that egregore. That was massive and very, very powerful. Mm-hmm. And I would say, if you look at the devouring mother instinct of, like, let's say the civil rights movement, and a lot of those other things, even pride, right? Like manifesting itself in the late 90s, early 2000s, that was sort of its zenith. That was when it was the most powerful and doing the most sort of mimetic harm to people. Now, with the wokeism, it's almost like its final manifestation is its end. And we're concentrating on this thing. But what's being born out of it is this vengeful son archetype, which, again, will feel good. But if you're in a position to use this, well, how would governments benefit from a few generations of men rising up, becoming more warlike and more ready to fight?
I was going to say, historically,
when you have people talking about reinitializing the draft in America. Just to cut through this bullshit, I don't think that the conflict in Ukraine and what's going on in Africa is going to lead to World War III. I think World War III is almost the materialist version of the end times. However, I do think that in order for the West to, this globalist regime, in order to reassert itself, it's going to have to pick a new god in order to get the young men back in order, in order to marshal them towards war. And if war is on their mind, they can't do with the devouring mother. The men are fucked right now.
Well, see,
there's not a pair of balls among them. Sorry, let me just finish this. Yeah. Collectively, so all of a sudden you turn it around to the vengeful son, and now you have generations of men who are like, give me something to kill, show me the way, like point me the enemy, and I will go destroy that. because the only thing that's on my mind is vengeance. So they can sweep through the institutions and they sweep through their country at first, purify that, and then all of a sudden it takes is a great man, you know, quote unquote,
right,
to point them in a direction and go, now we take that.
Interesting, because I've been aware of, I've seen premonitions of that on the right. And this is why, even when I talk to certain people about someone like Owen Benjamin, who will talk about the Jews, and I'm saying, like, no, he's actually the friend, because he's the one person standing up and saying, like, this is not the right approach. And when the response does come, he'll be the first one defending them. But I also see that this is something happening on the left. And this vengeful son is the trannies with the violence out there ready to fight. Like, these are the men, these are the abandoned men of our generation, to some sense. It's a little bit different than how you had seen it, but it's not happening. There's a major portion of an entire generation of men that are now radicalized and willing to jihad themselves for something they fervently believe in, because they've been abandoned by society.
And they're angry, and they have no meaning, and they have no structure. And all it would take is one strong man leader to show up in the West, anywhere in the West, and go, fuck this shit. First of all, we're gonna burn through our society and remove the rot and corruption, which is everywhere, and no one, and it's becoming harder and harder to defend. You're seeing the shift in Young Turks, for Christ's sake. Right, like the paragons, the media paragon, the alternative media paragon of progressive values is shifting on its axis, because they've been given directions, or I don't know where the line is.
It used to be organic.
Well, this is the thing. It is, because it is,
because right? they're the ones going, like, listen, you guys. I think they're realizing it's like it's sectarian almost, to a sense, where they're going, this section of our thing, like, they're too far. They're too far for them, and they're the far left. And they're going, these guys are dangerous. It's going to be the first gender-based civil war.
It won't be a civil war.
It's going to be like Sufi versus the...
It won't be a civil war. It'll be a rout. My prediction is this, and Buck saying this emphasizes the need for spiritual fathers and good priests.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, because the royal path, and maybe this is something I haven't really truly appreciated up until I started getting this together in my head, is the reason why it's so narrow, and I think it's narrowing, is that the temptations on either side are usually justified, mm-hmm. right? The true temptation is that it's not just it feels good, is that it by all intents and purposes, it is good. And if you think of the passions as inversions of God's gifts, even things like anger or you know, righteousness,
oops.
Right?
Oops. Sorry.
Invoke his name and
miracle show. Brought down God's wrath right there.
It's Second Temple Judaism in your house right now. But yeah, it's that these temptations are only temptuous, really, because it's not just something that feels good or that pleases us. It's something that can actually, by all intents and purposes, be good. And initially it is, that it solves the problem. And isn't that what we're all about? The issue is that we, because of our temporal nature and because we're fallen and all that stuff, we cannot understand the consequences of our actions.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the warning I have for any dissident right people following us and stuff, is that don't fall into this trap. And the trap is going to be that it's going to feel good.
Yeah. It's the hair of the dog, right?
Yeah. And they're going to go, we're going to get rid of these trannies. We're going to get rid of these people. We're going to, you know, we're going to jail this or jail that. And we're all going, yeah, yeah. You know,
no, that's been winning. My thing without sounding like a cuck, whatever, is that I don't, yes, you need structure and you need discipline, but that's not authoritarianism, and that's not it's hard to articulate it without pissing off somebody at some point. I don't really care, but I want to be thoughtful with my perspective on this, because I'm still not sure, because I'm really tempted to go that way of like hammer down, what's his name, Bukele, whatever, in El Salvador, that has consequences too. And again, this is why I'm always brought back to the Christian ethic. It's like, no, just be the good influence, be the
you have to transform people.
Yeah, exactly.
This is
not Ryan, imprison them. It's not, that doesn't,
Ryan Young says here, so wait until they do it. So okay, if we're going to get into we'll wrap this up. Sup, Carlos. We'll wrap this up a little bit on this. It's I'm not preaching I'm not preaching anything. I'm not telling you to be a pacifist or anything like that. There are times to take up arms. There are times to make lines in the sand, and you have to stand them. Mm-hmm. To quote Solzhenitsyn, the true the true battle between good and evil runs down man's hearts. So where we need to get very clear, and not with everyone else, but with ourselves, and this is the challenge and almost a ritual for anyone listening, to be truly right-wing or truly, let's say, in line. I'm going to abandon that term even.
Yeah,
be,
right-wing, left-wing, Republican. Do they
to be aligned?
To be a good man. Let's go with that.
No, to be aligned. Let me throw this term at you, Jason. No, I agree with you, but hang on. Let me throw this term at you. To be aligned with a natural order, that's a whole different thing, right? That is not being tempted into exacting revenge or against slights that you did not suffer, but you feel that your community or your civilization has suffered. So you're taking on the lashes from your civilization personally, and that's going to motivate you. Simply saying, you've done this to our great civilization. You've denatured us. You've done all these bad things to us. Therefore, I will react. What's Ryan saying? No offense, but I think you're early. Hope they can preach after they kill each other. Yeah, no. This is going to happen. This is going to happen very quickly.
Yeah.
If I'm right about this, and I feel like that I'm not, even if I'm inaccurate.
Do you think it's inevitable though? Because I mean, the reason I do this show is to try and hopefully
collectively it's inevitable.
Stop what seem to be inevitable cycles.
No. Collectively, it's inevitable. We're going to cycle into this to the end times. Orthodox Christians, we know how this ends, right? The only thing we can do within these cycles is try to save as many souls as possible, including ours. And the only way that's possible is by not sugarcoating things and looking at this dead in the eye and calling it what it is. And simply saying, look, you're going to be tempted by these things. And the true exaltation of humanity, the real call to the human soul, is to overcome these temptations. And look, I'm guilty as everyone else, right? Like I have to live in fear with having a daughter that, you know, someone's going to call because she's got short hair, because her hair doesn't grow that fast. Someone's going to say she's too boyish and you know, challenge me to affirm their prognosis of her gender, and then if I don't do that, they'll take her away. Like that's real fear.
Yeah.
And that's real because it's a real thing that exists in the world and exists in the country I live in. I don't know so much in Western Australia, but it's in Australia. They put
her in public school. You'll see real quick.
Right. So that's operating on you. And so it's very easy to say that anything that defeats that is my friend. That's my ally.
Right. Yeah.
And at first it will be. It will be completely your ally. It will be on board with you. But downstream, these things can be manipulated and used. And it's like you're gonna feed, if you buy into this without resisting on a personal level, you will be feeding your sons into and your daughters.
Well,
into
that's warmth. That reminds that's, me of
that's,
of
that's where this ends.
That reminds me of again Big Bear's perspective on the Nazis, on Hitler. It's like I see the same thing. I see a lot of people looking up to them as if they're some kind of an idol. It's like, no, these are the guys who did the exact fucking wrong thing. I'm sorry, that's always going to be my perspective on it. They took the ticket, they went with violence, they didn't stand up and be good men. They said, let's be militaristic and invade and authoritarian, and they fuck their country forever because of it. And I forgot where I was going with that. Yeah, don't do that. That's not the right path. And what people always forget, like, you're going to look up, they were German. Germans? Come on.
Okay.
That could be racist to them, right? That's the one group still allowed.
Let me start this.
Hey, look at you. If the chat can agree with me, Jay, that beanie is fucking magic.
The, see?
It's you are now tied to it for life.
Symbology is there. The greatest trick the devil ever played is convincing the world that Germany's a real country. So that's what I'm doing. You say that, but next time
I can concur.
Next time we have Curtis Yarvin on, I'm going to tell them that joke and he's going to laugh and we're going to get into it. Ladies and gentlemen, next week,
bring back Prussia.
We are doing a friend or fed. We are tackling RFK with Jean-François Guérepy. Hopefully, I'm pronouncing that right. And Colin from Counterpoints will be with us, along with LB Muniz, and of course my illustrious and good-looking counterpart and Beanie Boy over here.
Yeah, sorry, I just got to go because Ryan says because they lost. I think he's talking about what I just said. Yeah, they lost because they did it wrong. That's why they lost.
Sorry. Well, they actually opened the door to be taken out by an opposing force. Like they.
Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah. Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Sorry. Friend or fed next week, everybody. We're gonna maybe I'll do up a promo poster. Who knows. But yes. Either way, we'll tweet about it. Follow us on Twitter. Our handles are somewhere. Go to
friendorfed.com.
Share it. Spread it. But it's going to be good.
I'm out of the sickness, boys. Thanks, Buck Johnson, for chiming in. Thanks for everyone else who's been listening. Share. Thumbs up.
Comment. Send Jason some money, God damn it.
Send me some money. Appreciate it. I'm poor. Sick and poor. Poor and sick.
Help this man not work with his
wearing hands. Wearing a beanie.
Thank you, Buck.
I'm shilling now. This is where I've gotten to. Thanks, guys.
Peace.